out on the roads in Texas, it probably feels like you see a lot of Teslas or other electric vehicles every other mile, right? Elon Musk moved Tesla's headquarters to Austin 3 years ago. Texas has the second most electric vehicles in the country, according to the U.S. Department of Energy. So it's probably a great place to be an electric vehicle owner, right? Not so fast. According to a new study, Texas is among the worst states in the country in which to own an electric vehicle. In fact, it's the second worst ahead of only Washington State, says the research team at EV Charger Reviews. The group used six factors to rank states: electric vehicles per charging ports per square mile, average electricity cost, money saved annually when owning an electric vehicle, EVs per service center, and tax credits. I know, that's a lot. Texas came in the bottom 10 for three of the six, though it did rank 15th in average electricity cost. The report says even though Texas has relatively cheap electricity, the infrastructure for EVs isn't good, the annual savings on gas is about $1,000, and there are no tax incentives. By comparison, owning an EV in some of the top states on the list could save drivers nearly $1,500 a year on gas, and many of them offer tax credits of more than $5,000. I'm Chris Blake, and today on Texas Wants to Know, we're revisiting Odyssey's quarterly conversation. This time, it was focused on the state of the environment. Jeff Gilbert of Odyssey's WWJ in Detroit spoke with analysts Stephanie Brindley of S&P Global Mobility and Sam Ubbles-Samid from Gatehouse Insights about the Motor City's relationship with electric vehicles.
Environmental issues dominate the auto industry's agenda these days. Here in Detroit, carmakers are spending billions to transition to EVs while also dealing with a market that today wants the latest and greatest in pickups and SUVs. Well, carmakers can build electric vehicles, but they need people to buy them. This year, that's not been as easy as before. That's why you're seeing price cutting and carmakers changing plans. Joining us to navigate these issues, two people who really live this every day, Stephanie Brindley, Sam Ubbles-Samid. Both are top auto analysts. Stephanie with S&P Global Mobility, Sam with Guidehouse Insights. Now, Stephanie, I just saw some numbers today from the Alliance for Auto Innovation. They count, and this seems a bit much to me, 114 EVs on the market at the end of last year. While it sounds a bit high, it still means there are a lot of new models out there, a lot coming. And how has this addition of new EVs impacted the market?
That does seem like a quite high number, although there are a number to choose from. And what that does for consumers is it gives choice in different segments for electric vehicles. One of the things that needs to happen for electric vehicles to get more popularity is to be in the segments that people live in. And they need to have more than one option. So if you've got a compact SUV electric vehicle, you need several of them in order to sort of grow that market. In the meantime, it's also complicated because consumers then have more choice, more nameplates. And there's a point where consumers can get a little bit fatigued by how many things they can consider.
And Sam, we're seeing a lot of discounting now. Why are we seeing so much?
Well, even though there's been a lot of new nameplates introduced over the last 3 years in the EV segment, one thing we haven't seen is very many affordable EVs. The vast majority of what we've got are at very high price points that are beyond the affordability of most consumers. And combined with the changes to the tax credit program that came with the IRA, a lot of vehicles that in 2022 would have been eligible for tax credits are no longer eligible because they're either not assembled in North America or they use battery components or materials sourced from other locations that the IRA explicitly prohibits. So manufacturers are having to adjust their pricing even though they haven't necessarily been able to adjust their costs of building these vehicles, but they're adjusting their pricing to try to get what they're building into the hands of consumers.
And go ahead.
The affordability issue, I think, is a key one. And I look at it, it's not the raw price necessarily. It's the price discrepancy between a comparably sized internal combustion engine vehicle. For example, Chevrolet's Equinox EV that's coming in 2 months or so will be give or take $5,000 more than a gas Equinox vehicle. That's where the affordability thing starts to come into play. If you're still at that, if you want a $35,000 electric vehicle, you can find one. but will it be in the shape and the size that fits your life? And it's still more expensive than a comparable internal combustion engine. And that discrepancy is one of the things that consumers are struggling with.
Sam, you wanted to talk about that?
Yeah. I mean, I agree with what Stephanie said on pricing. There's also the challenge of charging. Over the last couple of years, as there have been more EVs out there, more people driving EVs, we've also at the same time been hearing a lot more reports from consumers of finding charging stations that don't work or not finding charging stations at all. And so I think a lot of people that might have been considering EVs over the last couple of years have maybe backed off and said, I'm going to wait a while until the charging infrastructure situation improves. This is one of the reasons why the industry has shifted over to from the CCS charging connector to the so-called NACS or J3400 connector that was designed by Tesla and done deals with Tesla to get access to the supercharger network, which has been much more reliable than any of the other public charging networks.
And I was going to bring up charging later, but we'll bring it in now since Sam brought it up. Stephanie, talk a little bit about what's happening. I mean, getting back to that report I quoted earlier from the Auto Alliance, and you know, I think they like to throw out dramatic numbers, and this is dramatic. They say we need to install 437 chargers a day for the next 7 years to get to where we need to be. Yeah, you're kind of groaning and squinting at that. But we do agree that we need a lot more chargers than we have. But how do you determine the sweet spot? Because most people with EVs do most of their charging at home. But when you go on the road, you need it. But often you only need it for a short period of time, unless, of course, you live in an apartment, which is a whole different thing. So it is so complex.
It's very complex. And then, you know, with the charger, whether or not it has the right charging pace and all sorts of other things coming in, and how quickly can you build them? I look at the charging infrastructure development. It's going to take time. It's going to evolve. And part of it will be a little bit organic. You're trying to find the space of having the charging infrastructure available so people can adapt while not having something that's sitting there not used for 5 years. If we look at the development of the gas station, I mean, we're talking 40 years before you had a gas station that kind of looks like what we have today. And we had that settled in about 1955 or 1960. So the idea that we're going to suddenly get an infrastructure in the next 2 years and this is how it's going to happen, I think is a false narrative. I think that we have to understand that the infrastructure is going to take time to develop. It takes time to do permits. It takes time to lay cable. You can finance these things through a bunch of different ways, but you know, even incentives and things like that, you know, the incentives don't actually put the shovel in the ground to dig up and put the cable in. These are just going to take time. And I think in that meantime as well, we are going to see consumers find different ways to work with charging than we expect. Exactly what they're going to do, I don't know yet, or else I would have solved it. But I do think that there's an opportunity that consumers behave a little bit differently than we expect.
And I want to segue to another subject before we finish, because we've got to talk a little bit about new federal emission standards. And Sam, you're an engineer, but I'm going to ask you to translate this into plain English, staying away from greenhouse gas emissions and cutting that. What is this going to mean for the average consumer?
It means the new emission standards mean that manufacturers will have to sell vehicles that are much more efficient and produce much less greenhouse gases than they do today. Part of that is that's actually going to require a range of electrification solutions across the spectrum. So whatever vehicles they sell that aren't battery electric vehicles are still going to have are predominantly going to have electrification of some sort, whether that is a traditional hybrid, a standard hybrid system, or a plug-in hybrid. I think towards the end of this decade, you will see very few new vehicles sold that don't have some degree of electrification as part of the powertrain.
And Stephanie, right now we're seeing a lot of hybrid sales. Are we moving in that direction as we get into the next decade when there's a lot of heavy lifting with these rules? Can we see car makers get to this without doing as many EVs as some environmentalists would like and shifting at least some of the burden to hybrids?
Some of the burden will shift to hybrids, but But if we look at some of our forecasting and research, we expected there to be a lot more hybrids the second half of this decade, even before these requirements. What we are also seeing is consumers are finally used to hybrids after 25 years, and that automakers are now able to really package hybrids in a way that consumers don't feel like they have a big price penalty. It behaves pretty much like what they have, and it's very easy. For example, Honda CR-V, they would like to see 50% of their sales be hybrid. Well, if you have a consumer who comes in and wants an ICE engine vehicle, if you kind of shift them to that hybrid, they're going to be just as happy in most cases. And so I think we're seeing a little bit of that happen as well.
And Sam, final question goes to you before we wrap things up. The consumer is the big variable here. Could we get to a situation where we have a lot of vehicles out there that are great, they're environmentally friendly, but people aren't buying them?
That is certainly a potential, especially if the vehicles that are out there are beyond the affordability range of most consumers. We could end up in a situation where though the number of people who can afford the vehicles is shrinking. And I mean, I think we've already been seeing that. And the overall new vehicle sales could end up declining just because people can't afford what is offered to them.
I'm Chris Blake at News Radio 1080 KRLD in Dallas-Fort Worth. Thanks for joining me for Texas Wants to Know. If you like this episode, please give us a rating and a review wherever you listen to podcasts. I wrote, edited, and produced this episode with original music by Michael Eisenstein. Odyssey's managing producer for National News Podcasts is Myron Kaplan.